My name is Jimmy, and I am an Al-Anon. I've gotten a lot of advice since I arrived here yesterday by giving this talk. My wife has told me what I could say and couldn't say. Ruth told me that everything would be okay if I just imagined all of y'all in your undershorts. But Jerry had better advice than that. He said that if I would imagine you with no clothes on at all, then everything would be right. So if I start moving around, it's working. It's difficult for me to express the way I feel. It's always been that way ever since I could remember. I think the problem is that if I let people get to know exactly who I am or how I feel, they won't like me. And that's been a problem with me. I've always had the problem of opening up to people and sharing with people. So it was difficult for me to come into Al-Anon because of the discussion meetings that are held in Al-Anon. I was born in 1948 in a small town in North Florida. The first 6 years of my life, I don't remember. So when I think of alcoholics having blackouts, I can relate to that because I have no memories at all of the first 6 years of my life. My mother died in those 6 years. I can remember two things about my mother. Number one, she smoked because I can remember that she had ashes in her eye, and I always felt like that her eyes were going to burn up. And the other thing, I can remember being in her arms when my father knocked the door down and came in to get me. And other than that, that's the only two things I remember about it. After she died, I was real lonely. And it was strange. I never have been one to be affectionate. My wife could tell you now, I'm not one that goes up or hugs people easily or kisses people easily. And Al-Anon's helped me a lot with that. But I wanted that when I was growing up. I really did. I wanted somebody to come hold me and tell me it was all right. And my father was like I was, or like I am to some extent. He could not express his feelings. He could not come up and hold me and tell me everything was going to be okay. But I was thinking about that today. I was thinking of Dwight. I see him in a lot of meetings, and I see his daughters with him. And they're always hugging and kissing Dwight. And he just doesn't know how lucky he is to have that. And that comes from this program, from being honest with each other. And that's something I never had. So I went to the second grade, and I can remember coming home, and children are cruel. They really are. They'll kid you about anything. And what they kidded me about was not having a mother. And it hurt. And I didn't have anybody to tell, you know, how I felt. And so I carried that around a long time. And I started hearing voices. And I didn't know if I was crazy or not, but I could be sitting at my school desk, and there would be these voices talking to me. And that bothered me a lot, too. The voices left, but I know then that I was having problems. I was really, really being, I was getting disturbed because I couldn't get what was in me out. And so something had to happen, so it came out physically. I developed an ulcer when I was 7 years old. And that was taken care of with some proper medication. But I loved my father. He was everything to me. We did everything together, and of course he had to go off to work every day, and I would go off to school, and I had a sister and a brother, and it was just the four of us. Of course he couldn't take care of us because he worked so hard, and we had what we called a nanny. That was somebody that came into your home and took care of you, and we had a special relationship with this woman, and she was sort of a mother, and she would hug me, and I was very appreciative of that because it meant so much to me. But my father got remarried. He married his dental hygienist. My father was a dentist, and he had a lady that worked for him that had been married to an alcoholic, and she was divorced. And when I think about my mother now, she's my stepmother. I love her very much because she came into my life at the right time. But see, she had been involved with alcoholism. She had divorced her husband, who was an alcoholic. She had a young daughter my age. And about 2 years ago, her ex-husband tried to make amends to my sister, and she rejected it. So I know how hard it is to make amends, and I can appreciate being able to accept somebody the way they are and to allow them to express that they're sorry. But my stepsister didn't do that. And it was funny. My father would pick his dental hygienist stuff, and of course he would take me because I was the oldest. You know, I'm 7 years old. I'm a big shot. And I was dating the daughter. So we would double date. And the big thing was that McDonald's had just opened up in Tallahassee, Florida, and we would go over for a big night on the town, which consisted of going over and getting a hamburger and going to the show. Well, since my father was in love, I fancied myself as being in love at age 7. So since he was going to marry the mother, I was going to marry the daughter. But after they got married, that didn't work out. And I do have a nice stepsister, and she never lived with us. That part never worked out. She could never accept my father, and my brother could never accept my mother. So it's kind of strange. And we all had different churches. My sister went to the Baptist church. I went to the Methodist church. Other sister went to the Episcopal church, and we were just spread out. You know, it's like letting everybody out on Sunday. But I still didn't have anybody to talk to, and I was really lonely. And I can appreciate friends today because I didn't have any friends. I mean, I saw people at school, and I talked to them, but as far as getting close to people, I wouldn't let myself get close to people. So the only way I had to remember the good times was to take pictures. And I would do this by taking mental pictures. I can remember things all through my life up to today that I would say to myself, this is good. This is happiness. And I want to hold this. And the way I would do that would take a mental picture. And I store all these pictures in my mind. And when I'm feeling down or want to recall something, I'll just pull them back. And it makes me happy. I said not long ago in a meeting that what I wanted in life, most of all, was to be happy. And somebody told me that's not a destination, that's a journey. Sarah told me that. She said that's something you work on a day-to-day basis. And all this time I thought that was the final end, that was my destination. If I could just be happy, that's all I want in life, to be happy, to be comfortable. And I have a hard time with that. But that's a journey, and it's a journey we take every day, and we decide whether we're going to be sad today or happy today. And that's one of the many, many things I've gotten from Alana. I did well in school. I did do one thing that I feel guilty about. I cheated on a spelling test when I was in the second grade. And I thought I was going to be a real genius. You know, most people wrote it on their hands or wherever they could write it. I just wrote it on a sheet of paper and sat on it. And I guess the teacher was wondering why I kept looking between my legs so much. But anyway, she caught me and she embarrassed me. She really let me have it. And more important, I had to go home and tell my father I cheated. And this was hard. This was hard to go home and tell the most important person in your life that you cheated and got caught. But it was good for me. It made me appreciate it. And it made me know that I never wanted to do anything to lose the respect of my father or anybody that I felt so strongly about. So I decided then that I wouldn't cheat, that I would do the best I could, and but I wouldn't cheat. And that's one thing I value in my life, that I haven't cheated. That I have been honest in my schoolwork. I was not smart. I was average, but I studied a lot. And I worked hard at my school grades. All through school, they give you an achievement test, and it's supposed to measure what grade you're in. So if you're in the second grade and you take a test, you're supposed to be, you know, the good ones will get up to the fifth or sixth grade. Well, I was in the third and fourth grade, and the rest of my classmates were getting in the seventh and eighth grade. Not me. I stayed the second grade or the third grade, the grade I was in. So measuring my intelligence was bad, and I was very embarrassed by this. I was always at the bottom, and I was always telling myself, you know, there's something wrong. I study, I make good grades, but yet I score so low on these tests. And this followed me all the way through school. But it did make me do one thing. It did make me study hard, and I did make good grades. And there came a time when I had to find something to take up my time, and I turned to sports. And that's the only way I could to get some relief from the pressures I felt from the needs I had, but I didn't know how to tell anybody what I needed. My brother had these same needs, and he had to go to a psychiatrist, and this bothered me too, because I felt like maybe that I needed to go to a psychiatrist, and it's something I couldn't accept. And I didn't go, but my brother did, and I feel like he's an alcoholic. He's had drug problems, and he's never been the same. He never grew up, but that's okay. I can accept that. I wasn't able to accept that before I got to Al-Anon. But I did well in sports. I could run faster than everybody else except one girl, and that was my goal. If I could just run faster than this tall, lanky girl, then I would have it made. But after about the fifth or sixth grade, she kind of slowed down, and I got a little faster than her, and it went good from there. And but it still bothered me, the achievement test. I got ready to graduate from high school, and they give sports awards. They had, for the scholars, they had these little keys that they gave. Now, these were national scholars in sports because they had scored so well on these achievement tests. And I had been in sports and done well, but I had made, again, the worst grades on these achievement tests, so I could not receive this award. And I was the only boy in my high school that finished with an A average. So that meant I had to give up and give a speech, something like I'm doing tonight. And I was very embarrassed because the principal had to get up ahead of me and give all these awards to all these scholars and that had passed these tests, and I had to just stand there and get up behind that. So that bothered me a great deal. And prior to this, we had to take a test to go to college, and Florida gives a state exam that allows you to go to one of the schools in Florida. And I took that test, and I didn't pass it. I could not go to a state school in Florida. So my other choice was go to a junior college. I couldn't find a college. So my father, he found one for me. It's the one thing that I've always been proud of, the fact that I've never asked my father for anything. And maybe that was a problem. Maybe if I had told my father early on that I really needed him to hold me, to tell me he loved me, then things would have been different, but I couldn't do that. But he did find a college for me to go to, and it was over in Oxford, Georgia, and I went a year over there, and I made real good grades. I made a dean's list, and I knew if I had to take more tests to get in another college, I couldn't do it, but I knew if I went there a year, I could transfer. So I transferred over to the University of Alabama, and I graduated from University of Alabama in 1970. But I met a lot of good people over there and had a lot of good times. I didn't study. Alabama was such that you didn't need to study. If you paid your money back then, I don't know how it is today, but if you paid your money back then and made an attempt to take the test, that's all you had to do was show up and take the test, then you could get through. But I have a lot of good friends over there, and that's one of the good things that's happened to me. It's one of the first times that I really had good friends. I had one friend that everybody used to kid. I guess everybody has that type friend. You're always picking on somebody. And he was a tall, lanky guy, and he wasn't that good looking, but we used to pick on him something terrible. And I could imagine when they start picking on me, I would get real resentful and real hurt, and I would kind of retaliate and strike back. But this guy took it, and he laughed, and everything was okay. And I found out in Al-Anon why he did that, and that's because he liked himself. He truly liked himself, and I didn't like myself. I didn't like anything about myself. But a time came that I had to leave school, and Vietnam was going strong, and I, for the first time in my life, I won something. I won a low number in the lottery, and there was no doubt that I was going to be drafted, and right before I got out of school, I did get drafted. But a good thing happened. The students burned the ROTC building down in Alabama, and we didn't have to take finals. They sent us home, so that was a good thing. But I didn't want to go to Vietnam. I didn't want to get shot at. I'm not saying that I was a chicken, but I was scared. I just didn't want to go. So I decided that I'd join the Navy and see the world. That was the only way to go. That I had dreamed of traveling around, and I was a big movie nut. I loved to go to the movies because I could escape that way. And, it was one way I had to get some relief. But I joined the Navy, and being from Florida, the closest naval training station was Orlando, Florida, so they sent me to Orlando. And got ready to leave there, and I was going to get a school. Well, I ended up in Pensacola, Florida, going to school. And then we got to put down our three choices. And I put down Hawaii and Japan, and I think I put down England. And I got Miami, Florida. So, here again, something had gone wrong. I had joined the Navy to see the world, and I did see all of Florida, driving back and forth. I even took my physical over in Jacksonville, Florida, so I hit all points. You know. But I was down in Miami, and I spent 3 good years down in Miami, and I learned a lot about myself. I was a slob when I went into the Navy. I had no discipline. I never appreciated anything. I had always been handed what I needed as far as money or clothes, cars, or anything. My father had always been good to me that way. He'd always given me exactly what I needed. And I never had to ask him for anything. He always gave it to me. And, I was very fortunate that way. He gave me a fine education. And my wife was not that lucky. She had to work to get her schooling. I didn't, and I can appreciate what she did. But down in Miami, I had 1 year left, so I ended up going to Alaska. So I did get to see an island in the Aleutian chain called Adak, and what it consisted of was 5,000 guys and no women. And there was no trees. There was nothing but tundra and a big mountain. And we all lived in little tunnels. Everything was connected by a tunnel. You didn't have to go outside because of the weather. It either rained or snowed every day. And the only thing that was there was they had 3 movie theaters, and they had 2 bars and a bowling alley and an indoor swimming pool. That's how I spent my time. But I knew my choices. I loved the movies, and I would go to 2 or 3 shows a day. And I could have chosen to drink, I guess, but I didn't. I chose to read books, and I read a bunch of books while I was there. I would take an author and just start reading the books that were there and read them all. I took Jacqueline Suzanne and Harold Robbins, some of those that really let you escape. Kind of sexy, too. There's no women, remember? But I did pick up an author I didn't know anything about, and his name was Lord C. Douglas. And that had a big effect on me. I read, I can remember, The Magnificent Obsession, and it was talking about a doctor that had found the secret in life that that what you did something for somebody else, but you didn't let anybody know about it. And that's something that we often don't do. I know I don't do. If I do something for you, I want you to know about it, and I want you to thank me for it. But this doctor didn't do that. He would loan money to people, and he would make a stipulation that if you accepted the money, that you didn't have to pay it back, or if you wanted to, you could, but you couldn't tell anybody where you got it. And that was his secret. And there was another one that I read that was called White Banners, and that was surrendering, giving of yourself freely, not being white all the time, throwing up that white flag. And that's something I had always been. I always had to be right. And the rogue, who could ever forget the rogue and the big fisherman? All these books were so good. And what was more important, that Lord C. Douglas admitted that he was an atheist. And that when he finished these books, he was a believer. And these books helped me to believe. They helped me to believe in myself. And this year was good for me because I was all alone. I called it like a utopia. I escaped from everything. I had no pressures. There was no money to spend, nobody to impress, nothing. Just that island and me and the people that were on it. And I guess I value that year in my life more than any year that I've had as far as what it did to me to change me. And I value more that I was allowed to read those books, because I know if I had never gone there, I never would have read them. That was important. I came home from ADAC, and I'd always wanted to be something. My father had sent me off to college to be a dentist, and I was going to come back and take over his practice and live in the hometown and be real successful. And I had felt bad about that because I did bad in school when I went to Alabama, and the grades were not good enough to get into dental school. And besides, you've got to take a little test that measures your knowledge. And I knew I was going to flunk the test, but I came home and wanted to go to law school. I don't know if I really went to law school for myself or for my father. And I don't know today. I've never practiced law. I've never really used the law. But it's something that I wanted to do. So I started making these applications and going off to take these different tests. And I didn't make the grade. And the grades came in and my father would open them. That's one thing about him. He always opened my mail. So. It's a good thing I didn't get any hot letters. But I didn't pass the test, and I was very disappointed in that. In fact, I took it three times trying to get into law school. But there was a book in the back, and in the back it shows unaccredited law schools, and these are the law schools that will take anybody. And I knew that if I wanted to go to law school, I could. And that was a good feeling. I'm glad that people have enough sense out there to offer something to people that don't score well on tests, because I never would have had the opportunity to go to law school. And I was real grateful to John Marshall Law School in Atlanta. They did allow me to go to law school. And so I came to Atlanta in 1975. Prior to that, I had stayed with my grandfather. I had come home from ADAC, and as I had told you, I had read the book White Banners, but I still had to be right. And my mother and I did not get along. She was always right. And when I think about it, because of the knowledge she had of life, she was right. She really was. But it was hard for me to say that, yes, you are right, and I'll accept that. So we did get in arguments, and I found that I couldn't stay with her, and that I had to go into the country and live with my grandfather. While I was away at ADAC, my grandmother had died, and she was the one that always kissed me and held me. And I was always pushing her away, because I didn't know how to accept that. I had been in her bedroom when my father had come in and told me that my mother had died. And I can remember standing there, you know, at 6 years old, saying, I guess I should cry, but I don't feel like crying. And I said, and besides, you know, little boys don't cry. You know, I don't see men cry. I don't see anybody express any affection. So I won't cry. And I turned inward. I I call myself getting tough, not expressing any affection at all. No feelings, just cold. And that's how I've been most of my life. I just can't express it. And I guess that's why I want to be happy. I feel if I could do this, I could be happy. But I know that's not the answer. But I did. I went out and stayed with my grandfather, and it was a good experience. It was just, he was 82 years old, and I guess I was 26. And I stayed with him a year, and we really got to know each other. And I really came to love him and to respect him. And he had always been good to me. But I did come up to law school, and I had made up my mind that because I did so poorly on tests that this time I was going to prove myself. I had disappointed my father when I went to Alabama, but this time this was going to be it. I would do the very best I could, and it would be no less than my best. And that's what I did. I overdid it. I can honestly say today I became obsessed with law school. I ate with a book. I slept with a book. Everything I did was with a book. And I met a girl while I was there, and she asked me if I would be in her study group. And, she was a nice girl, and she wasn't too good looking, so I knew that I wouldn't get in trouble. But she was beautiful, and she was beautiful on the inside, and that's something I had never known. I had never known someone that was... When I always looked at people, I always look at their outside. And so that's what catches your eye. And I think we miss a lot of people by not knowing them on the inside, because that's where the real beauty is. And I did get to know her, and she was a very good person. And she was so good that she introduced me to my wife. And it didn't take long. I've always been scared of girls. I'll be honest with you. I went to Alabama for 3 years, and I can honestly say I only asked 3 girls out. And yet I had at least 4 dates a week. And they were all blind dates. They were all blind dates. And the reason for that is that I couldn't accept rejection. I had always been scared of that. I don't know. It was just something about calling a girl up and asking them out and them saying no. And that's something that I just didn't want to accept. But I didn't have to ask Mary Jo out. I really didn't. She asked me. And she treated me good. She really did. And she accepted me the way I was. And that was with the law school. And, it was not good for her. All I did was study. We didn't do anything. I always made excuses to go home and study, or the weekends were always taken up with studying. But she took care of me. She fed me. She tried the best that she could to make me happy, and we did get along, and I loved her. And that was different, because, you know, besides my father, I never had loved anybody. But I had made up my mind we wouldn't get married. There was no way I was going to marry. I mean, I had to get through law school, and besides, I had made this pact that that I would do the best that I could. But anybody that knows Mary Jo knows that she doesn't take no for an answer. It didn't take her long. Well, I will. I am proud of this. It took her 2 years, but that's probably the longest that ever took Mary Jo to do anything. But we had an AA wedding. It was a beautiful wedding, and it was all people in AA that came. And I had started going to Al-Anon. Now, I didn't go to Al-Anon knowing about alcoholism. Mary Jo had been sober for a year, and she was going to a lot of AA meetings. She went every night, and of course I was studying every night. But I did go to Al-Anon, and I just went there because Mary Jo was going. I mean, she went on Friday nights, and Friday was the night I took off. And our big thing was to go to Skyland. in Atlanta. And that became my home group. Not by choice, because that's where Mary Jo went. And so I accepted that. But I couldn't talk to the people there. I couldn't relate to them. What alcohol had done to their lives, how they had hid bottles, how they had lied, and all these things that they had done, you know. I couldn't identify with that. But see, I wasn't listening to them. They weren't talking about that stuff. They were talking about themselves. They were talking about their feelings. And finally one day I heard them talking. I said, God, they're talking about me. And I could finally relate to them. So I did start opening up some and sharing just a little bit, just enough to feel comfortable. But like I say, we had the AA marriage, and I can honestly say I hated AA. I hated it with all my heart, because after we got married, Mary Jo went every night to AA. I chose to stay home and study, but she went every night. She went to 4 meetings on Sunday. 4 meetings. She got up in the morning and she came home at 11 o'clock at night, and I didn't see her on Sunday. She wouldn't cook. She wouldn't keep house. She wouldn't do anything. She even took the clothes to the laundry to have them done. And she even got a maid to clean a 1-bedroom apartment. And I had problems, because I felt like that my clothes should be washed, my meal should be cooked, the bed should definitely be made, and these things weren't being done. But the biggest thing that I resented, and the biggest thing that gave me the problem, was the honeymoon. Now, honeymoons are what they're supposed to be, a honeymoon, and we had gone to Jekyll Island on our honeymoon, and, you know, she wouldn't help me get the bags out of the car, of course, and I wouldn't expect her to on the honeymoon, but I got the bags and took them into the room, and she was on the phone. I said, well, who would she call when going into the room? But she had called AA. And so right away, I hated AA. I mean, I really... You know, so on our honeymoon night, we went to a meeting in Brunswick, Georgia. But I said, you know, that's okay. She's scared, and I'm scared, and maybe it's better that it worked out that way. So the next night, we were going to have a big meal. We were going to have a big seafood dinner, and we sat down there. And Mary Jo's always been the type that could order anything on the menu. You know, she'd sit down there and order the lobster and the shrimp cocktail, all these good foods, you know. And I'm the guy that has good intentions. I go in there knowing what I want to eat, but when I get to the menu, I always order the cheapest thing. I don't treat myself good, and that's always caused me a problem. I can go out now, you know, I'm just hungry and want to eat something good, and I'll look at the menu and I'll order something cheap, something I don't want to eat. And it's always caused me a problem, but not my wife. She's first class all the way. She's always been that way. So this night, I can remember, we went in, and then she ordered the lobster and all this other stuff, and I ordered the fish of the day. And it was a specialty because, you know, it cost about $3, and Mary Jo's was probably $20. So, but when the food got there, Mary Jo said, I've got to go. I said, you got to go. I've got to go to AA. The meeting starts at 8, and it's 8. Mary Jo went to that meeting, and there again, I hated it. I hated it. I liked that she left because I got lobster that night. But, I did hate her. I not hate her. I did hate AA. I can honestly say that. And Mary Jo told me, she said, the most important thing in my life is AA. And that hurt. I wanted to be the most important thing in her life, but I wasn't. And it took me about several months ago, I was talking about that, how I felt when she said, you know, AA is the most important thing in my life. It comes first. My sobriety is everything. I wouldn't be alive
without this. And it's the way I want to live my life. And I knew I had to accept that. But what I didn't hear Mary Jo said, she said, that's the most important thing in my life, not the most important person. But a little girl told me that in the meeting not long ago. She said, if you'd have heard her, you would have heard her say thing and not you. So that makes it better today. I can understand it a little more. We came back, and I didn't give up on the books. I really became obsessed. I studied even harder. Twice as hard as I'd ever studied. And it was sometimes 20 hours a day. I made good grades, and I had made up my mind that I was going to practice law, that I was going to be an attorney. It was something that I was aiming for. It came time to take the bar exam, and I took the exam, and I failed it. And here again, I had failed the most important test in my life. And I didn't know how to accept that. I didn't know what to do. I can remember being depressed, and I remembered I had to get out of the apartment. I had to escape. And I can remember what I did when I found out that I had flunked. I went to a movie. The only thing I knew to get relief was go to a movie, not talk to someone in Al-Anon, not tell them what I was feeling, but just go and escape. But the worst thing about that is that I had to go back the next day. The grades came out. I had to go face my schoolmates. The dean's list had come out, and I had finished number one in my class, and I was going to have to give a speech at graduation. And the first 10 people on that list had all passed the bar exam except me. The number one missed it. And how was I going to deal with that? How was I going to go back and face these people when I had flunked? And a guy at AA called me, and a lot of you know him, he's Joe P. And he called me up, and he asked me how I felt. And I told him, the first time that anybody had asked me how I felt or had shown any type of concern. But he did. He went out of his way. He didn't know me. He saw me at meetings, but I had never talked to him. And he told me something that is probably the most important thing that's happened to me in this program. He said, there's a reason for everything. He said, if you're willing to look for the good and the bad, then everything will be okay. He said, more important, he said, if you can go back into that classroom and serve as an example to the others that flunked, then the purpose will have been served. And I thought about that. How could I go back into that room? How could I act like everything was okay? But I did the best I could. I took his advice, and I went back in. I didn't try to make excuses for my failure. I just accepted it. And things were better. I felt like people understood. It was hard flunking that exam. It was hard flunking all those exams, but that was the one that mattered the most. It's the one I had worked the hardest for. And I guess Al-Anon did come in this time. I had to turn to something. I had to have some way to let it go. And the Serenity Prayer was it. It was the only way. I had to accept the way I was. I had to accept me, that if I did the best I could, then that was enough. And I had to believe in myself. So I let it go. It's something like you just beat and beat and beat on the wall and it doesn't fall down. And then you back off, and all of a sudden a storm comes up and knocks the wall down for you. That's what Al-Anon does for us. It teaches us to back up and wait. So I backed up and waited, and I didn't worry about the next exam. I studied for it. I studied hard for it, and I took it and passed it. And I'll tell you, it's the only exam I've ever passed in my life, and it's the only one that I really let go to that I didn't worry about. But I had done something stupid after that exam. I had taken a job because I was out of college. The GI benefits that I was getting for going to law school had ended. I needed to have some money. And when your wife goes first class, you've got to have money. And so I went to work for Wendy's Hamburgers. Now here you are, 3 years of law school flipping hamburgers. But it was good for me. It let me get away from all the studying I'd done. For the first time in my life, I relaxed. I had fun. I worked a lot of hours, and I stayed with them for 2 years. I just left them a year ago, and I doubt I ever would have left if it hadn't been for Mary Jo. And she's always been good for me. I can't make decisions. I never have. I couldn't make the decision to get married. I couldn't make the decision to order what I wanted on the menu. I couldn't make a decision to move into another apartment. I couldn't make a decision to buy a house. Not Mary Jo. She can make them like that with no problems. But that was good for me because I knew, I found out in Al-Anon why I couldn't make these decisions. Because if I made a decision, I'd have to be responsible for the results. It would be my problem then. So why not let her make the decisions? If it went wrong, I could say, see what you did? And it wouldn't hurt me at all. So Mary Jo was very good at decision making. And she made the decision about the Wendy's. It was a very simple decision. You are the job. Me are the job is what she said. And she meant it. So I did change jobs. And it was a hard decision because I've always been security conscious. I've always been the type that had to have a couple hundred dollars in the bank for emergencies. I always plan for emergencies. You know, there's one that's going to happen, and I better be ready for it. Not Mary Jo. There's no emergency in her life but today. And if I had to borrow money from her, I couldn't do it. There would be none there. But Mary Jo lives the way I wish I could. She really enjoys life. But I left that job and I did get into something law related. And I'm a hearing officer today. I'm what you would call a grievance hearing officer. Al-Anon has helped me with that because I have to go into a hearing and hear two parties argue what is wrong between them. In a lot of respects, it's like being a counselor, psychologist, because an employee is upset with a manager, and they sit down and talk about it. And, one side will tell them what's bothering them, and the other side will tell them what's bothering them, and then I have to decide what's really bothering them and make a decision. And I don't think I could do that fairly if I hadn't have had Al-Anon. And what I mean by that is Al-Anon has taught me how to listen, to hear what people say. Not what I want them to say, but to really hear what they're saying. When I got to Al-Anon, I was like a leaf. If you'll sometimes look in the winter, you'll see trees that have leaves attached. And they're just holding on. And they're all dried up and dead, but they're still hanging on to that tree. And that's how I was. I was still hanging on to all my problems. But when the spring comes, the buds come out, and those leaves have to go because they have to give way to growth. And that's what I had to do in Al-Anon. I had to grow or get out. Mary Jo never quit going to the meetings. And I still resent it. I hate it. She never cooked. She never washed. She never made that bed. And it bothered me, and I would always bring it up. You know, I was always giving her the riot act about the house. And she was tired. She came home just like I did. I mean, why should she have to cook? Why should she have to make the bed? Besides, she made twice what I did. She told me that enough. But I figured out that through Al-Anon that I had to live my life the best way I could. And if that house was bothering me, I had no business taking it to Mary Jo. That I could solve the problem myself. It's something that I can take care of. So I don't bother her about the house or about cooking. I take care of it myself. And the reason I do that is not for Mary Jo, but for me. It makes me feel better. And if I feel better, then I don't have any resistance. I don't take it out on her. If I come in and the bed's not made, I could ask her when she got home, why don't you ever make the bed? But I don't do that. If I go 2 or 3 days and the bed is not made and I get uncomfortable about it, I go in and make the bed. But I do that for myself. Mary Jo tell you I was getting back at her, but that ain't right. I do it for myself. Al-Anon's important. And after I changed this job, I went from about 70 hours a week working, a lot of nights, to only 40 hours with loads of time out. The job I'm in, they celebrate everything, like the third Memorial Day, and, you know, just holidays you never heard of. But it's been good that way. And we did move. We did buy a house, and we moved out into Gwinnett County, and we met so many good people. The best things that have happened to me have happened out in Gwinnett County and with the people I met in AA. I went out to dinner the other night with a good friend of ours in AA, and we were talking. We were sitting there. We were just sitting there, and Mary Jo said something, and I said, "Oh, that's your problem." And this girl got all over me, and she was right. You know, they give us tools in Al-Anon. If you gave somebody the best tools in the world and showed them how to build a house, they could build that house. The same with Al-Anon. We've got all the tools, and we can go to all the meetings we want, and the people in those meetings will show us how to use those tools and build ourselves the best life that we could ever hope for. But one thing, one of the tools they had given me in Al-Anon was, that's your problem, detach. And they didn't tell me that those tools could be used as weapons. And that's what I had been doing with that. I'd been telling my wife when I would get mad or I didn't want to accept something, that's your problem. You take care of it. And that was a weapon. And I was using it well. And Lindsay, I appreciate that. My wife had told me that for years, but since you did it, I'll accept it. And it's been good. Not long ago, my father sent me an insurance policy. And it was taken out of my life when I was born. And it had all been paid up, and he just sent it to me because he thought I'd like to have it. I had never asked my father about my mother. I didn't want to bring it up because he meant so much to me, and he never mentioned it, so I was never going to ask him how she died. And it was hard. But it was in the insurance policy. It was there. It gave her cause of death. My mother was an alcoholic. She killed herself. I don't think I could have accepted that before I got to Al-Anon. And that's why I think things are meant to be. There are many forks in our life, and we can choose which road we want to go. I was fortunate that I got to go the way I went, because I think if somebody had told me that my mother had killed herself when I was growing up, I wouldn't have been able to accept that. I wouldn't have been able to accept the alcoholism and all that comes with it. But now I can, and I understand what my mother felt. I understand because now I go to a lot of meetings. I go to 5 meetings a week sometimes. One time I went 7 times and didn't even know it until Mary Jo told me. But I've learned more in this last year, and it came from meetings. See, all this time my wife was going to the meetings, she changed. I married a girl that was so dependent on me that would do everything for me, and she changed. Her life got better. She got a sponsor. She worked those steps. She changed. You can't imagine where she was and what she is today. She's so beautiful. But I didn't change. I didn't change because I didn't go to meetings. I heard what people said. I only went to one meeting a week. I went every Friday night to Scotland. But then I did take the time to go with my wife. And we met so many nice people. And it's been so good. I want to do one thing for myself, and that's be good to me. That's what this program teaches us to do. Be good to yourself. Treat yourself good, because today is all we have. We might not have tomorrow. I was reading in the paper just this morning that I think it was one of the Tennessee players had been hurt in a car accident. He had signed a, no, it was one of the North Carolina players. Had signed a contract with one of his teams. I can't remember the name, but he had been injured in an automobile accident and he was paralyzed from the neck down. And that's important because we read that and we don't think about it. It could very well happen to us. We could leave today and not be here next year this time. And so I work on being good to myself. I appreciate you asking me up here. Clarence is very special to me. I love Clarence. I had the opportunity to tell my grandfather I loved him before he died. And I never would have done that without Al-Anon. I had the opportunity to tell my father I loved him and to hug him and kiss him. And I never could have done that without Al-Anon. And more important, my father hugged me and kissed me back. And that never would have happened without Al-Anon. Thank you.